start out tonight by reading a koan from the Muon Koan. And this is koan number 8. And just to give you a little, just to scare you with it, this koan here was among the, I don't know the exact number, I think it was 7 or 8 most difficult, most hard to penetrate, most hard to sink your teeth into, most hard to break through koan that Hakuin determined. He, having gone through this and with many, many students, this is a very, very difficult koan. I'll read it first and then we'll talk about it. So the title of it is Kechu's Wheel. And the case goes like this. Getan said to a monk, Kechu made 100 carts. If you took off the wheels and removed the axle, then what will it be? In the commentary, if you can immediately see through this, your eye will be like a shooting star, your response like a flash of lightning. And the verse goes like this. When the wheel of mind activity turns, even an expert is lost. It moves in all directions in heaven and earth, north, south, east, and west. So, one of the things that makes a koan particularly difficult, particularly impenetrable, is when the koan is pointing at something that you can't really talk about. You almost can't demonstrate. You can't begin to think about it. As Suzaki Roshi said to me many, many years ago, when I lived in this monastery outside of LA in the mountains for a year or so, one time he said to me, he said, Paul, your true nature has no color, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch. This thing that this koan is pointing at is very, very difficult to express, to grasp, to see. In the mind of someone who has not awakened to it, the objects in the world seem to obscure it and block it. The reason for this is that the mind very easily becomes enthralled with what can be seen, heard, tasted, touched, smelled, thought about, and take the various elements of experience and assemble them into what one might call a concatenation. Something that appears fixed, solid, outside you, self-existing, has a name, and is therefore distinct from everything else. It's, you know, something separate from all the other so-called concatenations, objects. So it's very difficult in the ordinary state of mind to see through these concatenations to what they actually are, what their substance is. This koan is dealing with this difficulty, and it's a very tricky koan. Now, it's the 8th koan. So by the time a student reaches this koan, they've already struggled with 7 other koan, including their breakthrough koan, and including, in our particular approach to these koan, probably another 50 or so what we call subsequent koan or accessory koan. They're not a formal koan, but they're koan that the student will work with to learn to work with koan, to learn to express their understanding of koan after that first breakthrough koan. So by the time you reach this, you've probably done 57, 60 koan. So to look at this fresh is even more difficult, even more puzzling. How would I sink my teeth into this? What is it teaching? Now, a very important aspect of koan is this. They are not puzzles to be figured out. It's not like that. As a matter of fact, when you, it's set up in such a way that you try to do that, you, it seems odd. It's like, but you reach a point where you can't, where that approach just isn't getting you anywhere. And then you can start to do really good work on the koan. And what I found on subsequent koan is a very, very important. When I say subsequent, I mean subsequent to the first breakthrough koan, mu, hu, whatever it might be, is to always go back to the initial understanding. And from there, look up at this koan, not down with your intellect. And then things can start to become more clear. So this is about, this koan is about a cart. The cart was a symbol. This really isn't a very important part of it, but Kequ was a very famous wheel builder in ancient China. And he built wheels at a time when the technology obviously was not very advanced. And his wheels didn't break and didn't collapse. And he became very, very famous for this. And he built supposedly 100 of these wheels, and they were all identical. And they all worked beautifully. He was a master wheel builder. So he also took these wheels and made carts. So Getang, who was a master, said to a monk, and Getang, by the way, was the spiritual grandfather of the Zen master that assembled these 48 koan called Mumon Koan. It was Master Mumon. So Master Mumon's teacher's teacher was Getang. And there isn't much known about Getang except perhaps this one koan. There might be some other things, but they're very obscure. So he said to this monk, Kequ made 100 carts. 100 carts. Why is that important? When I did Gross Anatomy, which was something that every medical student has to learn, and happens right in your first year, they bring you down to the anatomy lab and you work on a cadaver, a preserved cadaver. Now, there were, I think, 8 cadaver in my room and 8 in the adjacent room. There were like 16 cadaver, and there were 100 medical students. And there were approximately 4 to 6 students around each table, each anatomy table, with various instruments to dissect the body. And once you got past the skin, which was like the most superficial aspect, and you would start to divide the skin, open it up, look what's inside, it was an absolute marvel. It blew your mind. Some Kequ guy built this thing. Some master built this thing. Now, I'm saying that a little bit jokingly, because we know that there's such a thing as evolution. Nature is vast and inscrutable. But you got the sense that there was some miraculous, incredible intelligence underlying this object in front of you, where there was nothing in excess. Every single thing you saw was necessary, and it was packed in and worked totally. It was like looking at the most advanced robot you've ever seen. Like something out of Star Wars, but even way, way later in the future than Star Wars. This most advanced structure. Now, if you walked around the room, the next thing that would blow your mind is that every single body, once you got past whatever was the superficial concatenation of that person's individuality, was identical, the same. It was very amazing. Because we're used to seeing people as different. Each person is unique and different. That's how we see human bodies. We don't just see the appearance of the body, we see the mannerisms of the body, the personality, the person we know, the memories they have, all the things that make this a unique what we would call separated individuality, separated personality. But when you break it down, when you go to the anatomy lab and you get past, first of all, you don't have all the other things, you don't know the person, and they're not there in any sense that you might detect a mind or personality, and you get past the skin, you realize that every single one of these vehicles, if you want to call them that, are identical. Identical. So, that's a bit of a point or a hint as to how to approach this koan. So Getan said to this monk, trying to teach this monk, something that he couldn't speak of directly. He could try to explain it, but it would only become an idea. And Getan wanted this monk to get this aspect of it. So the only way he could in this particular moment was to tell this story and have the monk kind of penetrate into it and get it. Because you can't say it directly. And this is one of the things that makes this particular koan so difficult. So he said to this monk, Kechu made 100 carts. If you took off the wheels and removed the axle, then what will it be? So, here are a couple of ways of approaching this koan. One might be to consider the cart an actual cart. And at what point does it stop being a cart? At what point, when I take something off, is it no longer a cart? You might say, the minute you take anything off of it, it's not a cart. It's just an assembly of parts. And that's important in and of itself. Because when we the thing that we identify with, this body-mind complex that has a name, that we feel as a separated entity, is made up of so many different parts, and when they're all together, we call it me. And every single part is part of this separated entity. But the interesting thing is, when you begin, if you really look at it closely, if you were to lose an arm, you're still me. If you were to lose two arms and two legs, you're still me. If you were to be knocked out and wake up and have no memories at all of the past and just be in this moment, you would still be me. There's something there that isn't dependent upon the component parts. Is that what this is pointing at? What is that? Now, the ordinary person identifies with a separated entity. They feel that they are, in a sense, one of these billions of carts, a human being. There's billions of human beings on the earth, maybe 7 billion human beings now. One of billions of human beings, and each of them are similar in one way, but separate in another way. Each identify with the mind and body, with the life, with the history. So, it's then this human being is present in a world that appears to be outside. And it's there, not so much by choice, but we find ourselves here. One person described it, alone and afraid in a world I never made. This identity, this separated individuality, this body, mind, life, history, and everything else that goes with it, our preferences, our desires, our fears, are in some way tied together in what appears to be a separated thing, this cart. And this cart is plunged into an outside world that has its characteristics. So Heidegger, who is a famous philosopher, and he was a philosopher in this school of thought called phenomenology, which actually in many ways is very similar to Zen. Phenomenology would look at actual experience. Its philosophy would begin from your actual experience and also the nature of your consciousness rather than other more esoteric intellectual things that a lot of philosophy before these phenomenologists dealt with. So he used to talk about two things. He talked about this condition called Dasein, Dasein, which means being there, being in a location, being, perhaps you might say, in a body-mind, being this concatenation. Now, there was being in itself, but I believe that Heidegger saw that more as a theoretical thing. It wasn't quite, he hadn't grasped it. He didn't know what it was. So he talked about Dasein. And he also talked about something called thrownness. That this being there was thrown into the world, not by choice, found itself in this world, in this moment, having to deal, having to struggle, having all the vicissitudes of life upon it because of its thrownness, not by choice. You may not be able to find this, but the essence of it was this human condition, this identification with a body, a mind, that is separate from everything else and is thrown into this world and now has to struggle with it, struggle against it, and feel obstructed by it. So, what does this koan tell us about this condition and how we might begin to work with it as someone who wants to get down to the essence, who doesn't want to be fooled, doesn't want to have their vision blocked by concatenation, by an assembly of factors, you could call them skandhas, characteristics that all come together to produce something that seems separate and plunged into a world separate from it. So he points this out to the monk. He said, if you took off the wheels and removed the axle, then what will it be? If you took off the wheels and removed the axle, then what would it be? What is anything, really, when we break it all the way down? Now, to take off the wheels and remove the axle, he didn't say take off the wheels and burn them up and destroy them and throw them out. He didn't say take the axle and bend it into a pretzel and put it in the recycling. He just said take them off. Don't see them necessarily as associated. What is it then? So, one way you might put this is this cart, this thing that you call yourself, this thing that I identify with, it has a name. I've had it my whole life. It's plunged into this world, thrown into this world. What if I were to take off the wheels? Take off the wheels. Let's say disidentify with my thoughts, with my feelings, with my history, with all the things that we might call mind-created or mind-based, and take off the axle, which, let's just call it your body. What happens when you drop the body and drop the mind? Now, when I say drop the body and drop the mind, I mean drop it off as an identification, as the essence of what you are. So what if you were to see the mind but realize it is not yourself? See the body but realize it is not yourself. What have you done? You've taken off the mind and the body from this assemblage that seems to be a separated individuality. But what's left? What's left? So that is what this koan is asking. What will you be when you realize that your body is not you? That your mind and all its workings and all of its memories, feelings, reactions, is not that which hears, is not that which sees. What is it that hears and sees? That's what this koan is pointing at. What would it be? What are you? Here's all these bodies in a anatomy lab. They look like robots. There's no person there. They're just vehicles. Now, perhaps most of us have cars. Car is a vehicle. You may own it. You may be the only driver of that car. You may have had that car for 8 years and driven it 100,000 miles. But never for a moment do you say the car is you. It's a vehicle. It gets you from here to there. Only you have it. Only you own it. No one else can drive it. You have the keys. But it isn't you. And yet, when we see our body, which is a kind of vehicle, and when you go to a gross anatomy lab, you get it very quickly, that it's just a vehicle. It's almost like stamped out of cookie cutters. Why do we feel that that is somehow the person, the self? That's the first thing to have to really look at clearly, really get. That this body, certainly it's here, but is it really me? And how about the mind? And the mind really, when you come right down to it, you have these thoughts, you have these feelings, you have these tendencies, this personality. Is that what's moving your arms and legs? Is that what understands the words that I'm speaking right now? Is that what hears the sounds in this room? Is that not perhaps removed, not right at that place that is doing that hearing? In other words, there's something aware of these feelings, something aware of these memories, something aware of your personality, something aware of your situation. All of that. What is that? What is that? That is what this koan is pointing at. Now, if you were to take this as just a cart, fine. Take the cart apart. Take this world, take all the components of the world apart. Split them down to the tiniest component. Split them down to subatomic particles and go from there. Keep splitting them in bigger and bigger Large Hadron Colliders. Just build the biggest one you can and smash them together at the highest speed you can till you've broken them down into the tiniest things. You still don't know what they are. What is their substance? What are they made of? So it doesn't really matter. If you look at this koan from the standpoint of what is the essence of this cart when I take its parts apart and I no longer see the concatenation? Or what am I when I no longer identify with my body as who I am and I no longer identify with my mind as who I am? What am I? It doesn't matter which way you do this. The answer is the same. But what does he say here? In the commentary, if you can immediately see through this, okay, immediately. In other words, if you have to figure it out, if you have to intellect over it, you won't be able to do what comes next. So if you can immediately see through this, your eye will be like a shooting star. It will immediately, shooting stars in this moment, like that. Immediately, no hesitation, you will know exactly. Your response, like a flash of lightning, your actions will also come from the spontaneous place. When you're not identified with this stuck concatenation of tendencies, body, thinking, history, that you identify as a separated entity. Now the verse, this is really pointing again at this. It's very difficult, but it's pointing us in the direction, and I'm going to go into that direction in a moment. I'm not going to leave you hanging on this. So the verse is, when the wheel of mind activity turns, even an expert is lost. And mind here is capital M. When the wheel of mind activity turns, even an expert is lost. It moves in all directions in heaven and earth, south, north, east, and west. It moves in all directions. So when the identification with something fixed, something limited, something separated out, drops away, what you really are permeates the entire universe. It moves in all directions. In heaven and earth, it says here. All directions. What you are is in all directions. What you are is permeating north, south, east, and west. What is that? What is it? Now, this first half is even a little more difficult than that, because we can kind of get that part of it. It moves in all directions when you're no longer identified with something separated, something transient, something always changing, something that we would call objective. Call it objective. When the wheel of mind activity, what is this wheel of mind activity? What is it? You hear the sound of the cars out there. Is that not part of this wheel of mind activity? Spinning everywhere, constantly. Constantly changing, constantly moving, constantly vibrating. Everywhere. When this wheel turns, this mind activity wheel, when you see what it really is, when you know what this cart really is, even an expert is lost. Even an expert is lost. Dropped away. Where's the expert that knows it? That's separate. That's looking at it from afar. When the wheel of mind activity turns, even an expert is lost. This just mind activity. Just that. So how do we use this? In our Zazen, we have a wheel of mind activity. We call it our practice. Now, it might be following the breath, counting the breath, koan mu, shikantaza, which would be starting with an awareness, a mindful awareness of the actual experience of this moment. It's all the same. It doesn't matter what in particular it is. And as a matter of fact, although there are subtleties in the way that we approach these, in essence, every single form of Zazen, whether it's breath, whether it's working on a breakthrough koan, whether it's shikantaza, is going to the same place. It must go to the same place. It's just different vehicles for different folks. Everybody has their preference. I happen to like to drive a coupe. My wife thinks that it's ridiculous. It only has two doors. She drives a sedan, and someone else drives a van or a SUV. Everybody has their preference. Everyone who does Zazen at the particular point in time has a practice that resonates best with them. And that changes, definitely. We do progress through different sorts of practices. But we start with this focus. We go into it. What is it? So we see this cart called Mu. It's a cart, all right? It has a sound. It has a configuration. It seems to be outside. It seems to confront one. And we take off the wheels and the axle. We look underneath the superficial aspect of it to what is it? What is Mu? This is the question it has to come down to. What is it? What is its substance? How do we do that? When we're looking outward at Mu, when we're looking outward at a cart with its wheels and its axle on, it's confronting us. It's out there. When we look into it, when we peer into it, and there's a word in Chan Buddhism, it's called Tsen. When you Tsen it, when you look back into it, when you look into the essence of it, then you're looking deep inside. Now, what I often say to people is this. Take whatever your practice is and grab it with your teeth and drag it down to the deepest place inside of you. understand, how do you do this? Understand that not even one shred, not one particle of this thing is apart from you, is outside of you. There isn't one shred of it. Only you know it. Only you know it. Only you know this breath. Not one particle of this breath is apart from you. This actual breath, not the theoretical breath, not the breath that others might think you're experiencing because they see your chest moving up and down. The actual breath, your actual breath. Zazen is about actualities. What part of that, what particle is outside of you? Now, if it isn't outside of you, then it is you. It can't be anything else. If it's not outside of you, how could it be anything but you? But what is this you? What is it? That's what this koan's pointing at. Taking off the wheels and the axle is no longer seeing this thing as a concatenation confronting you. Now you've stripped it down. You've dropped away that idea that there's an objective thing here outside me, my object. Now I'm looking in at my own mind. What is it? This is the direction. This is the intimacy that is required to get this, to understand what it is that moves in all directions in heaven and earth, south, north, east, west, in all directions. Now, the fact that there are carts and that there are watches and people and situations does not in any way obscure this. Not in any way. Only if they are seen as outside, objective, separated, not part of this single fabric. They, each of them, is showing this thing that moves in all directions. This thing that moves in all directions is not obstructed by anything in this space. You might say that this thing is the space that permeates the universe. The fact that something is located in a particular coordinate in the space in no way diminishes the space. In no way. So, this thing is so intimate that there is nothing close to you. There's not even a paper's width between you and it. This is where you have to go. This no paper separation from this it, which is you yourself. It can't be described, because anything with a description, anything with a characteristic, is already standing outside it. Standing outside it. So this movement is what leads to what we call absolute samadhi. Absolute samadhi for every Zen student is really essential. This is the very core of what we do in Zazen. We go to this place. Now, it's not easy to get to, because we get hung up along the way. Certain things trap the mind, certain things catch the mind. These are those carts assembled with wheels and axles and struts and suspensions and all the rest of it. They kind of trap us, and we stop there, and we get stuck there, and we're blocked by it. We have to continually take off the wheels and the axle. Just see it as ever-changing concatenations of karmically bound stuff. But what is it? Don't get enthralled with its appearance. What is its substance? What is it made of? This is the question, the deep question that we have to ask. And this question, when it's asked very profoundly, you go to the very center of your center, the deepest part of yourself. There is a stillness. There is the beginning of this samadhi state. There's no other way to get there. This is the only way there. I've repeated this many, many times. It's very critical to understand this direction. And it doesn't matter if you're working with breath, mu, hu, shikantaza. It's the same direction. This is where we need to go in the depths of our zazen. Now, we emerge from this samadhi state. look up and there's a mountain, and the mountain appears in silence. Just there. Silence. What is that silence? What is it? The mountain is just there. The mountain in no way obstructs this silence. The mountain itself is this silence. What is that silence? It moves in all directions in heaven and earth, south, north, east, west, not obstructed by anything. Anything that appears to be objective, that appears to stand outside. All of those things are of its substance, are made of this thing. So this is why this koan is so valuable, pointing the direction, the essential point of our zazen, the essential point, going to this place. And is so difficult because there's no way you can really describe it. You must go there to your own center. Only you know it. No one can enter that for you. No one can occupy it with you. You must go there. This is the essence of your zazen. So we'll end there today.